You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 30th of September 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Once again, we've reached the end of another week, and the weekend is almost here. You're either listening in your lunch hour, or on your way home from work, or perhaps downloading from the archive over the weekend, but we know why you're here today. You're here today to hear from my co-host all the way from Texas, Grandpa Dan. Grandpa, how are you doing, sir? How's life treating you?
Well, you know, Sven, I am a glass half full sort of guy. Well, you know, I say that, but I think of the meme, you know, you've probably seen the meme. It's like pessimist, you know, the glass is half empty. Optimist, the glass is half full. Realist, this is piss. That is pretty much me. I'm a realist, and I sit here and I get a little discouraged because here in the U.S. we're stuck with this two-party system. We have the openly evil Democrats, but then we have the equally evil, but they try to pretend they're not, Republicans, who are just totally useless as fake opposition. And I could start feeling kind of down about that, but then I look over across the pond, Sven, and I look at Britain, and you've got the Tories. And as bad as the Republicans are, I have a hard time thinking they can surpass the Tories, because the Tories are so unbelievably bad.
It is. I'm afraid I have to agree with you there. And I can see how much you are enjoying this. We're going to talk about Liz Truss today, the gift that just keeps on giving. We're going to have a look at her first week in office and her government by taking a few choice headlines that we're going to provide some quotes from. The first one is Liz Truss's cabinet is Britain's first without any white men in the top jobs. And this was really trumpeted that this was the first time there was going to be no white man in any of the four most senior posts in government. Kwasi Kwarteng is taking the finance portfolio. James Cleverly is going to the Foreign Office. Diversity is now normal in Britain, says the expert. Well, that was on the first day, I think. Advance a couple of days, and we have this mini budget, which has been put forward by Kwasi Kwarteng. And then we have this headline. Tory MPs tell Truss, sack Kwarteng or face mutiny. MPs express disbelief over Sterling slump, as privately some fear Prime Minister's government is dead on arrival. Liz Truss is facing growing pressure from jittery Conservative MPs to sack Kwasi Kwarteng or face a mutiny after the Bank of England's emergency intervention to address the turmoil in the financial markets. And this is the new black Chancellor of the Exchequer, who has brought out this mini budget, which has basically caused absolute financial chaos, so much chaos that the Bank of England have had to intervene, and he's refusing to roll back on it. Truss is refusing to roll back on it. And there's just absolute chaos over here in Britain at the moment. And it looks like the pound has dropped down to pretty much the same level as the dollar and the euro. So I guess that must mean that both America and Europe must be in a similar situation. Grandpa, what do you make of Liz Truss and her diverse cabinet?
Well, pretty much everything with Liz Truss is panning out as I expected to, which is why I was supporting, you know, for what it was worth, I was supporting Liz Truss as the new Prime Minister of Britain, because I knew it was going to be funny. It was going to be like a tragic comedy sort of funny, but funny nonetheless. And right off the bat, we had the bragging of, you know, this first non-white male. You know, they openly boast about, you know, their anti-whiteism. You know, and this whole, there will be no white males in the cabinet. And, you know, that somehow in and of itself is supposed to equate to things will be better. Only the results, and we have this track record of results, is always the opposite. It's always worse, but we're not supposed to notice it. You know, here a while back, they were having, during the Queen's, this may seem unrelated, but stick with me, bear with me on this because it is related. I will tie it in. They had the Queen's funeral, you know, we recently had the Queen's funeral, and they had coverage of it here in the U.S., and they had it on TV. And one of the things that struck me about this is they're showing the funeral procession going through, you know, and you had all this solemn. And where we're constantly deluged with diversity, this was not the case. I noticed that they had the Queen's funeral going along, and like 95% of the people in this giant, massive funeral procession were white people. You had all these white men in their military uniforms looking solemn, and they're doing this funeral procession. And I thought to myself, this is like a funeral procession for white Britain. It really is. It's like symbolic. It's like a funeral procession for white Britain. And the TV camera, one of the cameras caught this angle, and it had the statue of Winston Churchill, and it looked like he was overlooking this funeral procession of white Britain going through here. And I thought that was so poetic. It was so poetic and really just kind of captured, you know, the funeral procession for white Britain. And this ties into this. You have this bragging about, we have this first no white male cabinet, and it's going to be so grand. Only within days, it's already a disaster. It's already a disaster, and we can take heart in the knowledge that it's only going to get worse. Don't worry, Sven. It's going to get worse for all of us before it's all done.
Well, you just have to look at it. You just have to think, I mean, is Africa, are any countries in Africa known for their grip on the economy? Are they known for their financial acumen? No, they're not. They're known for corruption. And I mean, just look at Zimbabwe with the amount of inflation that there is in Zimbabwe. I mean, maybe that was Liz Truss's thought. She thought, you know, well, this guy with this African heritage, he may be related to the people from Zimbabwe. He must have experience of inflation. He'll know what to do with the financial problems that we have in Britain at the moment. Well, Tory MPs expressed disbelief at how sterling had slumped after the government's mini-budget sparked market turbulence, compounded by the Chancellor's subsequent remarks at a time when households across the country were already struggling with the cost of living. They said Kwarteng would have to resign for the party to survive the financial crisis, as they urged the Prime Minister to reverse her plan to scrap the top 45 pence tax rate, which they said had been received badly in their constituencies. And I mean, this is on top of the financial chaos. You've got this idea where they're going to get rid of this top 45 pence tax rate, so the most anybody will pay in taxes 40 pence. And of course, that's just for the bankers and the really super rich. They're going to get 5 pence off their tax. And of course, the Conservatives have said, oh yes, but this balances out because those at the bottom end, those that were paying 20 pence tax, are now only paying 19 pence tax. So the poorest people have managed to save a penny, and the richest people have managed to save 5 pence. And of course, she's talking about this is going to be great. This is going to boost the economy. And it's basically crashed all the markets. And as I say, the bankers actually had to step in, and she's refusing to roll back on this at all. And so is this Kwasi Kwarteng. She is continuing to support him. What do you think of this scrapping of the 45 pence tax rate, Grandpa?
Well, we'll get into that in a little more detail. It's kind of a red herring, in my opinion. And like I said, we'll get into that in a little more detail, I think, as we go along, because it's coupled with their other brilliant strategies to boost to boost the economy. Now, you brought up Zimbabwe, Sven, and I have to say that whoever, I don't know who's ahead of Zimbabwe's government, but honestly, I trust that they're probably more competent than Liz Truss. than Liz Truss. I mean, how could you put Liz Truss in charge of a government and expect, you know, any kind of different results? Now I'm kind of limited. You could put a random person out of the phone book in charge, and they would do a better job than Liz Truss, because you see, a random person out of the phone book would be ignorant about how to run a government, and they would realize this, and so they would take counsel and listen to other people. You see, Liz Truss is not ignorant. She's a moron, and a moron never thinks they're wrong, regardless of the outcome of their actions. So with a moron in charge, with a moron in charge, you're just going to get more doubling down no matter how bad things get. Now, my question back to you, Sven, because I don't know, you have to educate me on British politics. When I look at how absolutely dreadful the Tories are, and I mean, they're just horrible. How bad is the my question to you, Sven, is the Labour Party really so bad that people will still swallow the bitter medicine of the Tories versus kicking them out and putting Labour in charge?
Well, the Labour Party are getting themselves prepared to come back to the seats of power. Apparently, in the polls, the Labour Party are absolutely trouncing the Conservative Party. And they just recently had their conference, which they began with a rendition of God Save the King. They had all these Union Jacks everywhere. It's quite clear that they're trying to get the patriotic vote there, and perhaps they will actually get in just by default. There was also one of the Labour supporters that was pointing out that supporting Ukraine just means supporting NATO, and NATO is just the American Empire. And I think he was kicked out from the conference, but it was quite good to actually see that there was somebody there that appeared to understand what was really going on in the Ukraine. But getting back to the article here, Simon Hoare, the Tory MP for North Dorset, tweeted, "In the words of Norman Lamont on Black Wednesday, today has been a very difficult day. These are not circumstances beyond the control of the government and the Treasury. They were authored there. This inept madness cannot go on." Robert Largin, the Tory MP for the Red Wall seat of High Peak, and the Red Wall seat, just for our American listeners, this was traditionally Labour voters in North Wales, and they all voted for the Conservatives this time. They all voted for Boris Johnson, who, of course, the Conservatives have now got rid of. Robert Largin, the Tory MP for the Red Wall seat of High Peak, said, "I have serious reservations about a number of announcements made by the Chancellor. I do not believe that cutting the 45 pence top tax rate is the right decision when the government's fiscal room for manoeuvre is so limited. In my view, this is a mistake." So they're being very polite there, aren't they? Talking about inept madness and saying that these are not circumstances beyond the control of the government. They were actually authored there. And I mean, these are the guys that are actually in the party that brought this about, basically. I mean, it's all very well them criticizing it, but they're the ones that are really responsible for this. I guess they're kind of like backseat drivers, pretending they've got nothing to do with it now that it's all gone wrong. But of course, they were the ones that got rid of Boris. They were the ones that voted in Liz Truss. They were the ones that cheered on this most diverse cabinet ever. And of course, this is the result. What do you make of these quotes here, Grandpa?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. This is just how the Republicans do here in the U.S. You know, you have these issues come up and the Republicans will run out there and grandstand about, you know, griping and complaining about them, you know, and, oh, this is an outrage. This is horrible. These things are happening. Oh, why is the government doing? It's like, well, you are the government. I mean, it's not like, you know, you and me sitting here talking about it. We can talk about these things and complain about them and point out how stupid these things are, but we don't have any actual power to change anything. These people, these politicians, whether it's the Republicans here in the U.S. or the Tories there in Britain, I mean, they are part of the government. Why are they not doing anything to actually change them? They want to go out in the media and they want to make these statements to, oh, we're outraged. This is happening and this is horrible and nobody could have seen this coming. And why doesn't somebody do anything? Well, the somebody that's supposed to be doing something is you, and you're not. You're just sitting here just letting it go on, and it, like you said, basically a lot of times cheering for it, encouraging it, but then you go out there and you want to play both sides of it. They want to play both sides and go to the media and say, "Oh, this is horrible. This is just absolutely horrible. This could go on." And I thought it was funny, the one MP saying, you know, "This cannot go on," but it will go on. Because and nobody ever seems to point out, except for people like us, that it's not just happening in Britain. This exact same plan of apparently intentional economic destruction is going on in Britain. It's going on in Europe. It's going on here in the U.S. It's like the exact same plan on some level or another, with a few details tweaked here and there. But we're on the exact same road. But apparently we're not supposed to notice that either.
Yes, incompetence we see everywhere throughout the European administered countries. And those were the comments that were made in public on Twitter. Privately, MPs went even further. suggesting the financial package had been a disaster and only a reversal of Friday's mini-budget and the sacking of the Chancellor could get the party back on an even keel, while others said the damage was now irreversible. One MP said Kwasi will have to go. She won't have any option. They are actually crashing the economy, and she will need somebody to blame. That's very nice of him, isn't it? Let's just throw Kwasi Kwarteng under the bus and pretend that Liz Truss had nothing to do with this. Apparently, there's an office for budgetary responsibility or something like that, and they didn't even bother to run this mini-budget past this office for budgetary responsibility first. They just unleashed it upon the country and caused all the markets to crash. And you would imagine that the public would actually be quite supportive of it, because part of it is that the fuel bills aren't going to go above £2,500 for the year, when it had been predicted that it was going to go up to £6,000. But I have yet to hear anybody that has anything good to say about this mini budget. What do you think about the idea of throwing Kwasi Kwarteng under the bus to save Liz Truss, Grandpa? Do you think it would work?
Well, I mean, there would just be the next disaster. I mean, Liz Truss is going to be one disaster after another. I mean, they can throw this guy under the bus and try to pretend it was all his fault. I just thought it was funny that this MP is talking about, you know, he'll have to go. They're going to have somebody to blame. And yet again, just to reiterate the point, these Tory MPs are doing the exact same thing. They're all sitting here looking for someone to blame and acting like they don't have any part of this. They're just powerless bystanders like you and I. They're just sitting back. They don't know what to do. It's just all of these things are out of their control. I mean, don't they have some sort of legislative authority? Again, I'm not pretending to be that cued in on British politics. But I mean, aside from those question and answer sessions where they yell out and stuff, I mean, I assume they have actual authority to write legislation in the government. And these people always, like I say, whether it's the Tories or the Republicans here in the US, they'll sit here and do this and act like they're just powerless. They can't do anything to change it. Oh, yeah, she's going to have somebody to blame. But that's exactly what these Tory MPs are doing. They're looking for somebody else to blame. Why don't you try working on fixing the problem? Of course, that's the one thing we're never going to see.
Getting back to the article here, another added, it's extinction level stuff. This is like 2008, but worse. We're messing with the fundamental principle of providing a home for your family. That's why it's different. It's real stuff the public won't forgive or forget. Another MP said the markets have completely lost confidence in the British government. If you reverse everything, the government falls, so they're not going to do that. She could sack Kwasi and appoint somebody who could then make a few tweaks, but I think people are seriously underpricing the chance that it's all over, that this government is dead on arrival. She's literally only been in office for a week, and she's already caused all of this chaos. I mean, saying it's like 2008, but worse, it's messing with the fundamental principle of providing a home for your family. I mean, this is because all the interest rates have gone up and all the house prices have gone up and people aren't going to be able to afford a house, as well as they're not going to be able to afford to heat the house if they do get it. But at least we have got this diverse cabinet. At least we can look at the cabinet and we can see lots of black and brown faces and lots of females there. I mean, that should be enough, isn't it? Isn't that enough for you, Grandpa? Surely that should be enough.
When people are shivering in the cold and in the dark because they can't pay their light bill, they will at least be able to say, at least we have lots of diversity. At least we have a lot of diversity at the top. And of course, again, we have this coordinated effort, this raising of the interest rates. You know, nothing. And you see this with these supposed experts, and they're raising these interest rates and they're saying that's supposed to stave off the inflation. But that's not been the result of it. I mean, they keep going, well, it hasn't worked yet, so we've got to do it more. Instead of stepping back and saying, well, obviously there's some other things at play here. They know there's other things at play. They're just not going to tell us there's other things at play. And this whole thing is coming apart, and they're trying to pretend like they're doing something and trying to somehow placate everybody and keep everybody from just breaking out the pitchforks and torches. Meanwhile, this ship is sinking. The entire ship of the West is going down. And we're just getting a continual doubling down on policy. The only bright side is we have Liz Truss to look at and laugh, because she's just going to be like this caricature of the failing West, because she will continue to double down in more and more dumb stuff, which is going to be funny. So I support it.
She is definitely, definitely entertaining. And we, of course, there is a second part to her plan with this mini budget as well. This is the second part of how she's going to revive the economy and get rid of inflation. Britain to get more immigrants, says new Truss government. Despite immigration being at the forefront of the Brexit debate, the UK's Conservative government wants more foreign workers. The British government has revealed its economic growth plan, which aims to drag the UK out of recession with tax cuts and increased immigration. While Prime Minister Liz Truss has promised to crack down on illegal entry to the UK, her government wants to recruit more skilled, unskilled, and seasonal workers from abroad. I mean, does that actually exclude any skilled, unskilled, and seasonal workers from abroad? That's just about anybody from anywhere in the world, and that is all that is needed in order to fix the economic problems that we have in Britain. We just need to cut taxes and open up the borders, but of course not to let in any of those who are trying to break in illegally. Well, who's going to be bothering to try and break in illegally if Britain is calling for skilled, unskilled, and seasonal workers from abroad? I mean, there's no incentive to actually break in illegally, is there? Because you can just get in anyway, whether you've got any skills or not, and wherever you're actually from. What do you make of this wonderful plan of Liz Truss's grandpa to open up immigration to save the economy?
It's just a rehash of what we have in there here in the U.S. When the Democrats or the Republicans, they will come out and they will say what we need here. Like recently, I think it was our moron vice president, Kamala Harris, who's basically our version of Liz Truss, comes out and says, well, we don't have a problem at the border. What we need is immigration reform. And when they say immigration reform here in the U.S., that means they basically take all of the illegal people. They say, OK, y'all have a problem with this. Y'all have a problem with these illegal immigrants? Fine, we'll fix this. We will give them a piece of paper, and now they're legal. See, problem solved. See, no problem at all. And this is a rehash of this. They come out and say, no, we're going to stop all these illegals from coming into Britain. We're going to give them a piece of paper, make them all legal. We would just make it so easy to where they don't have to be illegal anymore. They can, as you said, why would they come in illegally? All they'll have to do is walk into the correct office, get their piece of paper stamped, and come into the country. Voila, problem solved. We've reduced illegal immigration to zero. It's kind of like they do how they play with the crime statistics here in the U.S. They'll sit there and take things like carjackings or burglaries, and they'll reclassify them practically to misdemeanors. And then they'll point and say, see, we've reduced violent crime by 40%. You know, they just change the definitions. It is an amazing thing. And here we are getting into the details. And as you've already touched on, they're doing this tax cut thing. The 45 to 40%, they're cutting 5% on the wealthiest people, while cutting the workers' tax rate from 20% to 19%, 1%. Now, that 5%, this is my opinion, that 5% for the wealthy, they're all going on about that. That's a red herring. That is an absolute red herring. Look, if you played the lottery and you won, I don't know, a million, you know, 5 million pounds or whatever, then yes, you're probably going to pay that 45 to 40% because you're a moron and you don't know anything about this stuff. Anybody who thinks that the people that make their living in the financial markets in the city of London are paying 45%, I mean, what world do you live in? These people are not paying 45 to 40%. That is a red herring. They're not paying anything. That's how it is here in the U.S. You look into it, oh, we got 30% or whatever the tax rate is for corporations. But when you get into actually looking at it, there's so many loopholes. They play by a different set of rules. They're not paying anything. They're paying anything in taxes. So when they go on about this 5%, that's all bullshit. They're not paying 45%. They're not paying 40%. They're not paying 30, 20. You're lucky if they're paying 10. Most of them are paying zero. So that's kind of a distraction to muddy the waters. The workers get a measly 1%. This is supposed to calm everybody down. Well, we're giving you a 1% tax. It's a spit. It's spitting in your face, especially when you couple it with this. We're going to give you a 1% tax cut. Meanwhile, you can't afford to keep your light bills, your lights on. Oh, but we're going to boost the economy by increasing the competition in the labor market to further drive your wages down. You see, you're going to get a 1% cut in your taxes, but we're going to just flood your country with even more immigrants of, like they've said here, skilled, unskilled, doesn't matter. They're going to, across the board, put more downward pressure on wages. And this is somehow going to fix all of this. This is going to make your economy better. And nobody's supposed to question. We're all just, everybody's supposed to sit around and go, well, I guess it'll make things better. I made the remark before we started this show. I told Sven, I said, so we've come full circle with this now. We're back to, they're going to pay the pensions. We're going to bring these immigrants in and we're going to pay the pensions. You're not supposed to think, what if we went in here and all of the immigrants that are already in Britain who are on welfare, what if we deported all of them, took that welfare money and started distributing it to the people? Maybe that would boost the economy. But that's never on the agenda. It's if things are good, you need more immigration. If things are bad, you're going to get more immigration. At the end of the day, the anti-white agenda calls for more immigration. Heads you win, heads they win, tails you lose. It's always the same answer, no matter what the question is.
Well, before we even get to the cost of housing and looking after all these unskilled laborers, we have the cost that the tax breaks is going to actually come to, which is apparently $174 billion. Unveiled by Truss and Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng on Friday, the government's growth plan includes the steepest tax cuts in 50 years, with the richest earners looking at a reduction of the top rate of income tax from 45% to 40%, and lower paid employees expecting a reduction of the basic rate from 20% to 19%. Combined with handouts for Britons facing spiralling energy bills, the package is expected to cost the UK £161 billion or $174 billion over the next 5 years. And obviously this was written before the pound dropped to the same level as the dollar. So the pound is now at the same level as the dollar. So it's just going to be $174 billion for both. Kwarteng hopes to offset this cost by flooding the UK with foreign labour, claiming that immigration plays an important role in economic growth, productivity and innovation. The Chancellor's plan states that the government will set out a plan in the coming weeks to ensure the immigration system supports growth whilst maintaining control. And the document states that significant inflows from migration could help bolster Britain's economy. Yes, that's just what we need, isn't it? All the people coming over from Calais that are hanging out in the concrete jungle over there in their tents, they're going to bring us the economic growth, productivity and innovation that we need. Just what sort of innovation are those unskilled immigrants that are not wanted by their own country, clearly, or that they would actually be there helping out rather than in France? What kind of innovation are they going to bring to Britain, I wonder? Grandpa, perhaps you have some thoughts on that.
Well, again, we've come full circle to they're going to pay the pension. It's not like they can't look at the track record. They always come out with these broad statements like this immigration is going to bolster the economy, but they can't ever actually tell anyone how that's going to happen. You're not supposed to even ask those questions. All this means is downward pressure, force the prices of labor down. Now, part of this, you could argue, is they're using the traditional term of inflation, and they're in denial of the reality that that's not what we have. And the traditional definition of inflation, wages are spiraling up, prices are going up to compensate for the increased costs of labor, and those two things keep chasing each other. So you have this upward spiral. That's the traditional definition of inflation. And they keep using that term and they keep acting like it applies here, but that's not what we're having here in the West, whether it's Britain or the US or Germany or wherever in Europe. That's not what we have. We do not have the price of labor spiraling upwards. We just have the price of everything else spiraling upwards. So, you know, they're saying, I guess the argument they're trying to make here is that by bringing in competition, it'll force wages down, which would force, you know, which would cause prices to stabilize because they wouldn't be raising prices to cover the increased cost of labor. That's not what we have here. People wouldn't be in such complaining so much if they were getting huge raises every week to cover the cost of living. That's not what's happening here. But yeah, no, they're going to tell us that bringing in all of these immigrants is going to somehow make your life better. You're not going to get specifics on that. You're not going to get told exactly how that's going to happen. There will be no details. And of course, the cost of this is going to be higher. We all know the cost of this will be much higher, not because they're cutting the wealthy tax rate by 5%, because like I've already pointed out, that's bullshit anyway, but because instead of going out and actually getting jobs, most of these people are going to go to Britain and live on welfare. We know this. This was the case in Germany when Merkel claimed they were going to come in and pay the pensions, and they all came in and got on welfare, and that's what's going to happen in Britain. They're all going to come in and they're going to get on welfare. So the price of this will be much, much higher in the end.
Well, they're promising innovation. Of course, they're implying that that's going to be an information technology or rocket science, but we just know it's just going to be innovation in crime and gangsterism, particularly with Albanians being the prime migrants coming into the country at the moment. While the plan highlights skilled immigrants as key to economic growth, the Times reported that Home Secretary Suella Braverman will expand a scheme allowing farmers and producers to hire unskilled workers from overseas for longer than the current limit of 6 months, while Truss will likely lift the current 40,000 annual cap on seasonal workers. These decisions will likely leave many of the Conservative Party's voter base upset. Truss-backed Brexit after the referendum successfully passed in 2016, in large part due to Conservative voters' resentment over high levels of immigration during the preceding decades. Well, I really don't think the Conservative Party are fussed at all about upsetting their voter base. Their voters voted for Boris Johnson to be the Prime Minister, and the Conservative Party have now kicked out probably the most popular Prime Minister that we've had during my lifetime amongst the Conservative Party's voter base, and they've kicked him out and they've put Liz Truss in. So I really don't think they're that fussed about what the voter base think, and Truss seems to think that the voter base want exactly the opposite of what they are actually calling for. I mean, that so many people said about Brexit, we're voting for Brexit because we want to stop to the immigration. And what do the Conservative Party do? They say, what is it you want? What is it the public want? That's right, more immigration. Let's open up the country to anybody who wants to come here from Hong Kong, anybody who wants to come here from Afghanistan. And now they're saying, let's open up the country to anybody at all, whether they're skilled or unskilled, whether they want a job, whether they don't want a job, regardless of where they come from. That's what the economy needs, isn't it? More low IQ people from elsewhere in the world. Grandpa, what do you make of this?
Well, it's just, like I said, it's the same thing the Republicans do here. You'll have these the Republican politicians come out and criticize the Democrats over illegal immigration, but then they'll quickly go on Fox News and say, oh no, the problem is we just need to make these people legal. We need more. They'll sit there and say, we need more legal immigration. The problem is if they're just illegal, we need more legal immigration. None of these parties, save for maybe a few individual politicians, will come out and say, no, we need to stop all immigration. Why don't we try that? Why don't we stop all immigration? And we don't need any more people here, period. But of course, you never get that. It's always the same thing. And again, we should all find it curious that whether it's in the US, Britain, Germany, whatever, it's the exact same policies. They flavor it up a little bit. But you get the exact same policy, the exact same answers to the same problems they themselves keep creating. We get offered the same solutions. It's just cookie cutter. It seems awful curious. It's like they're obviously all on the same page, aren't they?
They certainly are. Well, it's not all doom and gloom in the Truss Diversity Cabinet. Although Home Secretary Suella Braverman is expanding immigration, on the bright side, she isn't doing too badly on other issues. This is another headline that we have here. Focus on catching criminals. UK police criticised after ordering public to not misgender trans pedophile. The central UK government got involved after a regional police force attracted attention for demanding the public not misgender a transgender pedophile convicted of abusing 7 children. Members of the general public were ordered by the Sussex police on Tuesday not to target the sexual identity of a trans pedophile convicted of abusing 7 children. The statements were met by outrage from many online, culminating with UK Secretary Suella Braverman criticising the force for playing identity politics. Sussex police have done well to put a dangerous criminal behind bars, the Tory party politician wrote online, but they've got it wrong by playing identity politics and by denying biology, she continued, before saying that they should instead focus on catching criminals and not policing pronouns. The police force then proceeded to delete their original tweets before putting up a statement apologising for their comments, which they described as being inconsistent with our usual style of engagement, a move that Braverman welcomed. I mean, that it really is a turn up for all the books that the Home Secretary has intervened there, but I beg to differ with this comment here that it's inconsistent with our usual style of engagement. And police are continuing making reference to hate speech. They had this big advert up before saying that giving offence is an offence, which they were forced to take down. We've had this skewing of the crime statistics by all these transsexuals. We've had people that have been victims of crimes that have said they've been raped. And of course, then they've been told, well, no, you can't have actually been raped because it was a woman, and a woman can't rape anyone. And that's effectively what's going on here, where we had the police complaining about people misgendering a pedophile who had abused children and then came out and said that he's transgender. So this is really a turn up for the books that she has complained about this, and also that the police have backed down, basically, and they've removed the comments. What are your thoughts on this, Grandpa?
Well, the police are an unsympathetic punching bag. I have no sympathy for them. This situation could have been tweaked the other way, where, you know, they used improper pronouns and the police were criticized for that. And you would have a government official coming out and criticizing them for that as well. You know, I mean, the police are kind of in a position to where, you know, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. They're going to be criticized regardless, and I have no sympathy for them. They've kind of made their bed. Now they can lay in it. They haven't pushed back at all, and they do everything, you know, they go along with all of these agendas. If you pointed out, you know, they'll be Johnny on the spot, say, oh, you criticize somebody on the internet and made them feel bad, you're going to get arrested or investigated for a crime. You know, but then they turn around here in this kind of situation where they can be criticized the other direction. And, you know, government official, politicians, whatever, can sit there and get brownie points and pretend like they're standing up for the people. So they're just going to be an all around punching bag on something like this. And I don't, like I say, I don't have any sympathy for them. I don't think it's a huge win. This guy, the suspect in question, you know, he's a total piece of shit. I mean, you know, when they say pedophile, it's not like, you know, here they'll say a lot of times, oh, this guy's a pedophile, and, you know, he was having sex with underage girls. I mean, I think there were children involved, like as young as 5 or 6 years old. So, I mean, this guy is a complete, you know, pile of trash. You know, it's not real hard for him to come out and get some virtue signal points. At the end of the day, I don't think honestly, it really matters a whole lot.
Well, we have a second headline here from Suella Braverman as well. Toppling Edward Colston statue was unacceptable. Appeal court hears after jury cleared 4 protesters of criminal damage for putting down the bronze memorial and throwing it into the harbour. This happened last year, I think. There was a Black Lives Matter riot in Bristol, and they basically lynched a statue of Edward Colston. And if it wasn't for Edward Colston, Bristol probably wouldn't even be there for all the money that he actually put into the city and the endowments of hospitals and schools. I mean, the man was a great philanthropist who just happened to work for a company that also sold slaves. And of course, we know where the slaves came from. It was black African chiefs that sold black Africans. It was the Royal Commentator that told us about this the other week. But because of this tenuous link to black African slaves, the Edward Colston statue had to be vandalized, lynched, and thrown into the river. And of course, the jury then cleared them because they were a politically correct jury, despite the fact that actually they broke the law. So after the jury's decision, Attorney General Suella Braverman, because she wasn't the Home Secretary then, she was the Attorney General, she referred the case to the Court of Appeal. This gave judges the chance to clarify the law for future cases and would not affect the 4 acquittals, unfortunately. Toppling a statue of slave trader Edward Colston was an, quote, unacceptable way to engage in political debate, close quote, the Court of Appeal were told after a jury cleared 4 protesters of criminal damage for pulling down the bronze memorial and throwing it into the harbour. Tom Little, QC for the Attorney General's office, argued that tearing down the statue was a violent act involving significant force. Public monuments, no matter what the context, cannot in a democratic society be damaged in the way this was, and this in substance amounts to an act of violence, he told the court. Damage to property, like violence against the person, is a simply unacceptable way to engage in public debate, he continued. And he later added, acts of criminal damage, whether it is this statue or many other statues in towns and cities around the country, they cannot be pulled down and damaged in the way this was, pursuant to the rights under Articles 9, 10 and 11. And he's referring there to the Human Rights Act, because, of course, the rioters said, well, it's our right to protest. But the fact is, they were not peacefully protesting. They were violently vandalizing and attacking public property and lynching this statue of, in actual fact, a very popular man, because every time they tried to put it to the vote about whether people wanted to get rid of the Edward Colston statue, they always said no. So this was just basically a lynch mob, mob rule. And again, Suella Braverman has come up trumps by referring the case to the Court of Appeal and winning the case. So I basically make that 2 points to the government, but they lose for that, for Suella Braverman, but they lose 5 points, I think, for crashing the economy and wanting to increase immigration. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on this? And what do you think of this appeal about this Edward Colston statue being pulled down?
Hell, I hate to be the rain on the parade, but I don't give them any points for it, for the simple fact that it changes nothing. The people who actually did it still get off. They still get off scot-free. And it's easy for them to come out right now and say, oh, this is unacceptable, it's illegal, they can't be doing this, because it's not going on right now. If, say, next summer you get a new wave of BLM protests and they begin dragging statues back down again and throwing them in the harbor, does anybody really think they're going to go in then and crack down on these people? Next time, we didn't put these guys in jail, but next time we're totally going to crack down on them. Of course they're not. Of course they're not. They're sitting here saying this is another one of those ways where they look like they're doing something. They're not actually doing anything. Nobody's being held responsible. Nobody's being criminally charged. Nobody's being criminally punished in a country that goes after people for very, very vaguely defined violations of hate speech laws and things such as this. You had a violent protest. We were talking about it at the time. You're half a step away when you're lynch mobbing statues that represent people, in this case, white people. You're half a step away warming the crowds up. You're warming the mobs up for actually lynching literal people. Of course, this was a violent act. And of course, you know, there's nobody been charged. Nobody. How about the organizers of this thing? How about the people that were there that were actually telling people tear it down? Would this not be an incitement to violence? If this ruling is true and they're saying this was violent, then the people who maybe didn't tear the statue down but were cheering it on, aren't they big on incitement to violence there in Britain? They could go back and charge those people, but they won't. Nothing will come of it. If these riots come around again, nobody will be charged. I'm sorry, we've seen it before and we're going to see it again.
Well, you could say that the police actually incited it by standing down and not doing anything about it. I mean, the police that were there, they just decided to allow it to happen. So they allowed the violence to happen. I guess really it's rather like closing the stable door after the horse has bolted, isn't it? Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with Albion narrations for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.